Let the train!
You are listening to
Truck it. It's your Nooner with Dooner, your Fiver with the Drivers. Hope everybody's doing good on this lovely Friday. It's finally stopped raining here, Chattanooga. I'm excited. Going over to AT&T Field just across the way in a couple hours here to go check out the Chattanooga Lookouts. I think because of all the rain, it's been their first home game, so I think it might be their real opening day. Lucky me. No, it's not so lucky. The freight industry right now, it's terrible. Take a look at this headline. This is the top story on FreightWaves.com. Noy Mahoney reports layoffs continue across the freight and logistics industry, with companies in Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Michigan, and Texas announcing job reductions and facility closures over the past 2 weeks. Our own CEO and founder, Craig Fuller, says logistics layoffs continue as we enter the third year of the Great Freight Recession. Who are some of these companies? Well, one of them is Universal Logistics. Warner, Michigan-based Universal Logistics is permanently shuttering two of its subsidiaries and laying off a total of 677 employees. That's a live look at the freight market right now. A garbage truck fire. Swissport Cargo Services, they are a global cargo handler. They recently announced it is laying off 235 workers at a cargo handling operation right down over here in Atlanta. The Kroger company recently announced it's cutting over 230 jobs and permanently closing delivery hubs in San Antonio, Austin, Texas, as well as Miami. RXO Logistics, they weren't immune from this. They're laying off 114 employees at a facility in Warren, Michigan. We've got Nosco, they're a packaging solutions company. They are releasing 51 companies in Texas. And then we have Ryder Logistics, who is laying off 29 workers from a trucking facility in Romeoville, Illinois. This big cliff that started basically in 2022, right around this time, we've been stuck in that sustained environment. You know, one of the worst things about it, and always brings me back to something that XBO's Brad Jacobs, or former XBO's Brad Jacobs, I believe he's with Silver Sun now, Brad Jacobs said on stage at Freight Waves in Atlanta in 2019, the best thing about freight is volatility, because that is how you make money. When you are in a sustained low rate environment where there are no big spikes or anything to look at over the past 2 years, 3 years, that's when it becomes really hard. And that's when we see more and more of these layoffs. And that's where we are right now. Unfortunately. Now, you drivers, you have to deal with this all the time because you go to truck stops and all they have for you over there is fast food, but so do so many of us workers. Take a look at fast food inflation. I know we've all suspected that this is a big issue, especially if you've been to McDonald's. Well, McDonald's is at 100% inflation since 2014. That's according to this chart from Finance Buzz. Popeyes is the second worst offender, 86% inflation. Taco Bell, 81%. Chipotle, 75%. Chick-fil-A, all right, only 55% there with Wendy's and Arby's. Subway, everybody makes memes and jokes online about the $5 footlong, right? Well, they're only up 39%, so they're actually doing a little bit better than the field here, but none of them are doing better than actual inflation, which is at 31% from 2014 to 2024. Hey, you buy fast food, you go to the grocery store, you're feeling this stuff either way. But my question for you guys, are you cutting this out? Are you cutting this out, right? You cutting this out of your diet? I partially blame delivery apps. I think that delivery apps let people know that, you know, someone will spend $22.50 for a Big Mac. Samuel Heiberg says the dollar menu index is undefeated. No doubt, Samuel. All right, we have an awesome show today. It's episode 705 of What the Truck. On it, I'm talking to Edison Motors LTD CEO Chase Barber about the troubles facing his EV truck Topsy in Canada after the company was recently denied a grant. Canadian opposition parties are demanding a probe into these alleged government kickbacks. Lot to get into there. Hey, we're on Road Dog Trucking. Today we got Road Dog Coffee Company. They say it is brewing up a tribute to America's truckers. We're going to meet their founder. We're even going to do a taste test. We've got Rhodes co-founder and CEO Amit Jain on the show. He's talking about AI connectivity and fleets. But before we jump over to Edison, here's a quick look at what they're up to now.
Edison Motors, a Canadian clean technology company that manufactures electric semi-trucks, and they're tough. Their L500 tandem packs a whopping 670 horsepower with an electric drive motor that puts out 68,000 foot-pounds of torque. Backed with a 450 horsepower cat motor, these are the toughest electric hybrid semi-trucks on the market. Check their website at edisonmotors.ca for their full selection of tandem and tri-drive units, or consider a retrofit kit. Built for truckers, by truckers. Edison Motors.
Now here we are with Chase Barber, CEO at Edison Motors. Chase, man, it's good to see you. Well, good to hear from you at least.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me back on, I guess. Man, it's been a wild ride since we were talking about logging videos.
So it is. You know, you've been on the show for a few years now. I've been following this whole project. And even a few weeks ago, I got to share a special moment with you. It just so happened we were like on a Zoom call together while you were getting your VIN number on Topsy, which was super cool. And everything sounded like it was going awesome for you guys until you recently dropped a TikTok video about an issue that you're having in Canada with these grants. Chase, like, what's going on with all that?
Yeah, so, you know, we're building these electric trucks now, so it all started, like, there's a lot of real funky conflict of interest going on with these government grants. And to give you guys an update, in Canada decided that they were going to put in and increase the carbon tax rate, which means that all truckers now have to pay carbon tax on the fuel they put into their truck in order to save the environment. And then that carbon tax money is going to go to the government, and the government is going to invest that money into clean tech programs to lower carbon footprints. And it's supposed to go to, like, okay, well, truckers are paying for carbon tax. Well, we're going to put out some grants to incentivize the lower carbon trucks, clean energy trucks. We built, like, the world's first plug-in hybrid, fully electric with a backup diesel generator, because, well, electric vehicles aren't enough to meet the capacity of almost any work. Like, maybe 10% of the trucking market can go fully electric. So we said, hey, go hybrid. You still get the advantage of electric, but you still have the range of diesel. And we were applying for some grants, and we have never gotten a grant in like 4 years.
Chase, what's the process like that? What's the process like to get a grant before we even get into the issues with the grant? How do you apply for these things?
You can go onto the website and you can write your own grant, but the website and the grant program is so convolutedly complicated that most companies have to hire grant writers in order to write the grant and submit the grant and deal with the entire government bureaucracy process. Which, we hired a grant writing firm, and they're about $5,000 to $10,000 or so is what the fella really wanted to write the grant. I think it was around that. I had to clarify that with Eric exactly, but a hell of a lot cheaper than that. This other company that wanted, at the lowest grant they applied for, wanted $200,000.
Wow. Because this is kind of where we get to the story. This is this whole, like, kickback thing that came up. This is what the opposition party is looking into, right? You sent these grants in, they got denied, and then you got a very weird message back from them. Tell us about that.
Well, so this is the interesting thing. I guess we better start right at the start. We were reached out by this one particular company to write the grants. And we figured that, no, that company's too expensive. We told them, no, we're going to go with a smaller business, more of a local business that kind of specializes in this rather than the really expensive big one. And then, so we had submitted that with the smaller one. Then the other company reached out again and be like, hey, we really think we should write your grants. Think you'd be a lot more successful if we wrote your grants. And then we basically realized, oh, they're writing the entire grant program. And then they administer some of the government grants. And then they turned us down for a government grant while they were trying to convince us to bring our company on with their company. Be like, hey, hire us for your services. Aren't you going to get, like, you'll have a better chance of getting government grants if you hire us? Oh, yeah, and we just turned you down for a grant that you were applying for. And maybe we didn't get the grant. Maybe that's accidental. I don't know. But this grant was for Commercial Vehicle Innovation Challenge. It was to promote low emissions electric vehicle innovation in British Columbia. And we are the only truck company making heavy duty commercial truck innovation, electric commercial trucks in British Columbia. So we are the only company making heavy duty commercial trucks. This grant was specifically for innovation in commercial trucks. And we got turned down by the company that was also trying to pressure us to sign on with that company for super high fees. And then we noticed that company, they were asking for a 20% success fee to apply for the grants. We noticed that this company also does the economic assessment of grant activity and funding opportunities. So the government hires them to do the funding opportunities in the low carbon space and electric vehicle transport space, recommend future grants, then hires them to administer the grant while this company has a grant writing division. And then the government then hired this company to audit the financial report of the government.
Wow. That sounds pretty sus. I mean, it's definitely sort of sus. Like, where does this leave you now? Like, they deny these grants. Like, how many companies are you competing against? How many companies are there like yours in Canada that are trying to electrify trucks that they would get grants instead of you?
There's one other company that's like 3,000 miles away, and they're making like axle delivery trucks. We're the only one making duty vocational trucks, and we're the only company making plug-in hybrid trucks in Canada and basically almost North America. Like, we're it. Like, who else was out there?
I don't, Chase, I think you're ahead of everybody too, because we're hearing, you know, you're hearing all the blowback from fleets and everything about having to adopt pure EVs. And a lot of them are trying to advocate for bringing hybrid back, which kind of got brushed over. And you're ahead of this solution. I think when legislators like wake up to this and they hear all this blowback and a couple, like, these hybrid solutions are going to be what they need.
Hybrid solution makes so much sense. Like, some of our testing we were showing in logging, you could do like a 70% reduction in fuel. City delivery driving, 30 to 50% reduction in fuel. Well, that's lower emissions right there. You just cut the emissions in half, drop the fuel bill, and it was a sensible solution that we were able to develop for really not much money when other companies were spending billions of dollars. We spent like $1 million on it. Like, it's nuts.
Jeez, what were you going to do?
This step is just being skipped.
What were you going to do with the grant money? Was this crucial to taking Edison to the next level?
Oh, absolutely. This would have, that grant money would have funded the process we needed to go through like FMVSS, to go through like US federal, so we could maybe start selling our trucks and exporting our trucks into the US. It was going to help with a little bit more of the engineering, the testing, the development. Like, we're a small company. I still live in my parents' basement, even though we've sold like 8-10 trucks, but that's the maximum amount of production. Like, hey, we could cover and put a little bit more money towards our growth, maybe not work in a tent, get an actual shop, hire on a few more guys, sell more trucks, bring more income in, grow the company. Like, it would have been huge for us. It was a $3 or $4 million grant. We've done everything we've done with $1.5 million. It would have allowed us to triple our growth and our development.
Jeez, but I
yet,
feel like
we turn around and we,
I almost feel like an intern at your company, because I followed your journey like for so long, and I know a lot of the behind the scenes and the in front of the scenes kind of stuff. And this is pretty sad to hear, because you guys had worked so hard on the blue truck, right? And you got up to Topsy, and Topsy just got its VIN number, and you're doing testing, and you're getting all this interest. You're getting to the stage where it's like, look, we need to manufacture. We need to be able to tell our partners we're going to be able to deliver stuff. And this puts you in a tough jam, doesn't it?
It definitely doesn't help. Like, we'll do it. It's a good idea. Customers are buying our trucks. Our trucks are being tested. Our customers are looking at them. They're saying, yes, this is what we want. And they're buying it. And the market is supporting the idea, which means we can do it without grants. It's just going to be slower. But my question, though, is if it's a good idea and we can do it without grants, how come these multi-billion dollar corporations are getting hundreds of millions of dollars? One company from Taiwan, a Taiwanese Chinese cement company, was received $300 million in grants to pursue batteries in British Columbia. This is a multi-billion dollar foreign international company that's receiving hundreds of millions of dollars of carbon tax money in order to go forward with their programs. But they're saying, well, local companies based right here that could add that the trucking industry is placing orders for, they don't need the support. It needs to go to these larger companies.
Have you thought of maybe coming to America? Have you thought of maybe going down to like the Texas area and developing this or something akin to that?
Actually, this week, the governor of Arizona wrote me a letter. Katie Hobbs literally wrote me a letter to invite me down to her state and come meet with her to discuss why Arizona or the U.S. might be better for us.
I think that you should take some of those meetings. Look, if Canada doesn't want you guys, and I know you have a great solution. My audience is a lot of truck drivers. And every time truck drivers see EVs, they crap all over them, right? They can't take a bigger dump on EV if they tried. But whenever they see yours, they love it. They love this idea. They love this idea of the hybrid. They understand the needs of their truck. They understand the needs of vocational work. So it's pretty clear there's obviously demand for this thing. And I think that the governor, I think Arizona's smart to reach out to you. I think Chattanooga or Tennessee would be smart to reach out to you.
I think so. Like, it would make sense to just move to the States for the business. But I'm a believer that if there's something wrong in your country, don't just abandon everybody else in your country and flee. Yeah. Like, work to make your country better. And so if I could use my TikTok and voice what's going on and show, like, hey, this might be a reason why we're uncompetitive. This might be reason what's going on. Maybe I can work to impact a positive change to make my country better. Because what if I just pack my bags and I run down to the States because of this, and I just leave everybody else behind to struggle? Not fair to everybody else. And like, is America just supposed to take everybody from all over the world, from every country that struggles with their government, and just take them all into there? Or should those people work to make their country a better place? And I believe I should work to make my country a better place to hopefully be able to sell freely into the U.S. and be competitive. It would be a last-ditch effort for me to just pack my bags and run, but...
Man, I gotta give you some. I gotta give you some. That's why people love you. That was an amazing answer. Like, no matter how bad your country is being to you, you're like, this is where I'm from. This is where my people are from. And maybe I can make this place better instead of running. I have a platform. I'm building this thing. Well, Chase, before I let you go, though, like, what's next for you? What do you do from here? Where do we go?
Well, we've sold some trucks, so we're gonna build some trucks, and hopefully, I can find a way of raising some money to buy a shop. Start producing, start getting them out there, and yeah, I'm excited.
Chase, are you still crowdsourcing? Are you still looking for people to help with this project?
The Canadian government put a ban on us crowdsourcing until we get our audited financial statements, which is a weird requirement, or we get bought out by, we have to be invested in by a certain amount by an accredited investor or accredited financial institution, because the government said that they don't like how with crowdfunding, we're free to kind of do what we want. They want a large investor to sit on our board to oversee us so that we don't do things like this. Like, we got a thing from the government that's like, yeah, you're not allowed to be owned by the people and do your own thing. You need an accredited investor on your board that's going to, who would just, I'll be honest, I think it's because an accredited investor, a large venture capital firm would say, just pay the 20%, take the $1 million in grant money. Yeah. Shut the fuck up, Chase.
No doubt. No doubt they would. And that's probably what that other company did, the battery one you mentioned, who had that big pocketbook. To them, $200,000 probably isn't anything. To you guys, it's a huge deal. Now, before I let you go, though, impress people with how awesome Topsy is. What is the heaviest load you've pulled in testing so far?
The heaviest load we've pulled in testing has been 107,000 pounds gross.
Woo. Nice. How long did you take that one?
Yeah, we beat Tesla by like 20,000 pounds.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. Topsy could kick the Tesla semi's ass, in my opinion. I haven't been neither. That's just my opinion. An uninformed opinion. Don't get mad at me, Tesla.
That's my opinion, too.
Well, hey, thank you. So people want to follow your journey. They want to stay on top of this case, and they want to know what's going on with Edison and help you get to the finish line. Where do I send them to?
YouTube, Edison Motors, or TikTok, Edison Motors.
Very, very cool. Chase, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for coming on the show. We'll catch up with you in a little bit and make sure and hopefully things are going a little smoother. Take care.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks.
All right, everybody. Let's see what's going on over here. Ooh, look at this manpower right here. Look at the Amish. This truck got stuck in a ditch. And look at the Amish. Come on over here. Get on the stage, man. I'm trying to buy some time. I'm trying to dance. And you're walking like a zombie. Jim Carfren says, look at these guys. Look at these Amish guys, dude. These are a bunch of Amish guys pushing a truck. Hey, loop that one more time so my guests can see it, because I think it's super impressive.
It is pretty cool.
Look at that truck right there. It's a Martin truck.
Yeah,
got stuck.
I saw this morning on LinkedIn.
Yeah, got stuck in a mud field. You ever try to push a truck out of a mud field?
No, I would not want to.
It's not easy. For your radio listeners, there's like, what? How was it, like 30 Amish guys pushing that thing?
Yeah.
It's a full Martin. It's got a big sleeper on that one, too.
But they're big, strong, heavy, you know, they're farmers, so they're used to that stuff, right?
They're farmers, and they are used to that stuff. Well, hey, man, we have you over here. Introduce yourself to everybody.
My name is Spencer Squire, and I'm the founder of Road Dog Coffee Company. It's America's first coffee company to showcase the trucking and logistics industry, and we are excited to be on your show. You're a rock star, dude.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're a rock star, too. I love coffee. I got to say, too, whenever a guest comes with, like, food or coffee, the production team in the back perks up. Everyone's in a good mood before the guest shows up.
Yeah.
So I got to thank you for that. I know you brought some of your wares. Show us what you got, man. Let's taste some of this stuff. And as we're waiting for that stuff to come over here, how about you tell us a little bit about the blends?
Yeah, so we've got three blends that we started out with. We've got Long Haul, Expedite, and Black Dog. And Long Haul is your everyday drinking coffee. It's a medium roast, sun up to sundown. And everything we do is geared around trucking, so everything's trucker-centric. So Long Haul is basically, like I said, it's sun up to sundown. Long Haul, those loads typically move sun up to sundown, right? It's all day long. Expedite is a dark roast. Most of your expedites run at night, right, at dark. So that's a dark roast. It doesn't drink like a dark roast. It's a low-acidity, floral tasting coffee. And then Black Dog is an ultra dark roast. You don't get the ashy burnt taste. It's very smooth but high caffeine, so it's designed to scare the sleep out of you. We also have our K-Cup line, which we don't call them K-Cups, we call them rims.
Rims, what's the difference between a rim and a K-Cup?
Okay,
nothing. Lawsuits, right? Copyright.
Right. No. So rims, so tractor tires, truck tires are on rims, right? Rims are round.
Well, we have a barista here. Barista, Bob the barista, you can come in a little bit. We know you're bringing stuff over here.
Come on over, buddy.
Look, we got a bag of it right here.
Yeah.
We got a cup.
This is our medium roast.
Okay, so this blend right here?
Yeah,
the long haul.
Right. And everything on the back of the bags, there's some history on the back of the bag that correlates to the front of the bag.
Yeah. I don't know. Are you supposed to do any coffee testing? I saw this guy testing whiskey on X yesterday, and he was, like, sticking his mustache in.
Yeah.
So I was trying to...
Don't do that.
Okay. That's nice. That's smooth. This is the medium?
Yes, the medium
this
roast.
This is good stuff. Medium roast called Long Haul.
Long Haul, yeah.
What else we got?
So we have Expedite.
This is solid. Got any extra bags of these?
Yeah. Yep. This is... we've got you some, too.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so this is the Expedite blend, and again, there's... stuff on the back of the bag. So this is your dark roast. Because like I said, most expedites run at night, right?
Yeah.
So that was kind of the inspiration behind that. It's a low acidity. It's a dark roast, but it doesn't drink like a dark roast. It's very smooth, low acidity, very floral. That is a great coffee. It's been a big hit.
Now, I got a question for you. I've heard this before. Is it true that dark roast has less caffeine than lighter roasts?
It does. So the longer you roast the coffee bean, the more you're roasting the caffeine content out of the bean. However, if you want that high caffeine content, you have to introduce it with Robusta blends.
Yeah.
Robusta coffee bean is the highest caffeine than Arabica. So you have to introduce a certain amount of Robusta to bring the caffeine level back up.
Gotcha. So. Is that what you guys do?
Yeah.
Interesting. So what is...
Now, this dark roast here, Expedite, is not... It's not a blended... It's not blended with Robusta. It's straight up Arabica, 100%.
Now, this one's really good. Now, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Now, some people, like, they have these Vandy coffee companies. They order beans overseas. They fill it in a bag with their logo in it, and they drop ship it to you. But that's not what you guys do,
no,
right? You're not cheesy
we do
like
not.
That.
We do not. Everything that we do is proprietary to us. They're unique blends. We do our fulfillment out of San Diego. Everything's roasted there. We have a technology called Color Track that's integrated into the roaster, so it pinpoints that color profile to a T. There's no guesswork. It takes it all
high
out.
High tech is coffee now. Pretty high tech.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's I'm still learning. I mean, I'm still learning and I've been in trucking for 30 years. I'm very passionate about the industry, passionate about the coffee. So I decided, to bring them together.
I like this one. I like the Black Dog here. It's
like
a wolf on it.
Yeah. So Black Dog, and I'm going to ask you a question here. See if you, you're up on your history.
Okay. Drop that video for a second. We're
gonna do Black Dog.
Yeah.
Do you know what Black Dog is and how it relates to trucking?
So that's when you're sleepy at night, supposedly there's the legend of the Black Dog,
right.
And that's what crosses the road and causes accidents,
before
right?
you call it crash and burn, yeah.
Yes.
So this is designed to scare the sleep out of you.
Okay. Is this extra caffeine?
This is the high caffeine, ultra dark roast. It does not have, like I said, the ashy burnt taste to it.
Okay.
It's very smooth, but you're going to get the... punch in the mouth.
Now, what's like the difference in caffeine content? Like, you know, like a Monster is like 300 for 16 or 20 ounce, like 300 milligrams of caffeine.
Yeah, yeah. I might have to kill you.
Yeah.
If I tell you.
Oh, you will?
Yeah.
Is it super high?
It's all proprietary.
It's proprietary information.
Yeah. Yeah.
The FDA should make you have to give that out. I need to know how much caffeine I'm drinking here. You see all those people at Panera who died drinking the death lemonade. Will I be okay?
Oh, really?
Will I be okay?
I hope so. No, it's not like a Red Bull or anything. But you don't have you don't have that burnt ashy taste in an ultra dark roast.
No, I'll tell you something. I like this one the best. And sometimes you mention that black. I like the high caffeine content.
Yeah.
You know, I like to maximize my load. I just like a big punch in the mouth.
Right.
A lot of times though, the high caffeine ones, like, it doesn't really work out because it's got that burnt taste. But this is like really, really smooth. I actually think it's smoother than the dark roast.
Yeah. It is. It is. Yeah, and they're two different, you know, profiles. So like I said, you know, this is a low acidity. You got that florally, taste to it. It's the bean in this one is called a Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
So you get that kind of, you know, taste profile from that region. We're a mission-driven company. We have two segments. We have educational and accessible. So educational, because we want to bring awareness to the public of how important trucks are and how they drive the economy. You know, I've always said if you buy it, a trucker bought it.
Sure.
If you bought it, a trucker bought it, right? So, you know, we want to bring awareness and education to the general public of how important our men and women are, how stressful their job is. It's a lifestyle. There's nothing glamorous to be a trucker.
Yeah.
But you know what? Without them, we're screwed.
Why deliver this message through coffee, though?
Well, because one, I've got a passion for trucking. That's my background. And I've got a passion for coffee, right?
So I have a passion for podcasting and a passion for freight.
Yeah, so I wanted to merge them together. Coffee is a commodity that everybody loves and drinks. Our truckers depend on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, accessibility. So the reason behind the accessibility piece is truck drivers cannot get a good quality premium cup of coffee in a truck stop, right? They can't do it.
Usually not.
Well, they can now.
Yeah.
And it's designed for them to take it on the road, versus if they get just a bad coffee or the rims.
Yeah.
I said, you know what? COVID is what really kind of prompted me to do this, because during COVID, it was all pandemic and all you heard on the news was, where's our truck? Our truckers bringing this. Our truckers are heroes and stuff like that. Well, after COVID, guess what happened?
The people forgot. It's just back to normal.
There you go. There you go.
They forgot immediately.
So, you know, I wanted to change the narrative. I said, you know what? Enough's enough. And our men and women, truck drivers, they work their butts off.
Yeah.
I mean, they work their asses off day in and day out to make sure everybody's got what they need to have in their homes. The shelves are stocked. So this was, I figured, say, hey, you know, coffee's never going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be replaced by robots and AI.
No. No, it can't. I mean, so, Celsius may try, but I still think a nice cup of coffee is an energy drink.
So you know what? This is the best way I could find to give back to the industry, to showcase it in a way that people can appreciate.
Yeah.
Because all the bags are named after terms in trucking.
Yes.
Right? We all understand what that is. So So that was kind of it's mission driven, and that's our mission, is to change the narrative in this country and make people truly appreciate when they're going down the highway. It's not just a truck blocking a lane. Don't get pissed off at them, right?
Drink a cup of coffee. Drink a cup of road dog coffee.
Yeah, right. That, and say, you know what? That man or woman, they're going somewhere with a purpose.
Whatever I'm going to buy, that guy brought it there. Yeah. Not that guy in particular, but you get the point. Now, I got to ask you something. Like, when you were formulating all these flavors, like, how many different beans did you go through to come up with these tastes?
Oh, God. So I worked with our master roaster and kind of, you know, put my vision, what I wanted, and we kind of formulated a plan, and, you know, based on his suggestions, because he's a master roaster, I'm not.
Yeah.
I know what I like and what tastes good, but, you know, these are very popular beans, and the expedite, actually, the Papua New Guinea is kind of, a lot of your artists and roasters will use Papua New Guinea. It's kind of a bougie coffee.
Yeah.
Unless we can also make trucking bougie a little bit, right?
A little bougie.
Yeah, a little bougie truckers. But yeah, so, you know, we worked and decided.
Bougie, how much does this cost? Where do I buy this from you?
Okay, so roaddogcoffee.com.
Yeah.
We are working with some wholesale channels currently. We're in you know, talks to, because that's our goal is to get in some wholesale retail outlets. But yeah, right now, roaddogcoffee.com, they're priced at $12.95 a bag.
Okay.
And also what we're doing, so we do first responder veteran discounts, and that's integrated through GovX. And what we need to do for trucking companies, logistics companies, need to email us, and then we can give a unique discount code for them and their company to give all of their employees and drivers discounts forever. Because there's no technology that we can integrate in that can verify the CDL. Then if I do that, then I'm bastardizing the cargo van guys and the straight trucks and the P&D guys.
Imagine if you solved like freight fraud and fraudulent carriers just through your carrier verification coffee program.
Right.
That would be something.
Yeah, it would.
That would be, you could spin that into another company. You'd have like a $1 trillion coffee company if you did.
Oh, we could talk about that.
I got ideas.
Yeah, I love them. Hey, we're an idea-driven company, you know.
Well, the show will be over in 14 minutes. You go hang out over there. I gotta talk to you after this. But in the meantime, everyone now, or if you're driving, because you listen to this on Road Dog Trucking, make sure when you stop, you go check out roaddogcoffee.com. Get yourself some of these blends. In my opinion, if you like high coffee, get the Black Dog. Thank you so much, Spencer. Talk to you in a bit. Okay, what do we got next here? Oh, look at this rate to strap work. This one is interesting. I don't know what the liability is at this place. So this guy right here, what you're looking at, according to my buddy Logan Davis at Link Logistics, he says, I follow this page on TikTok. It's a scrapyard where anything you can carry across the 50-yard line is only $75, no matter how much stuff you have. So this explains why this guy has a truck bed, a four-truck bed strapped to his back. There's another guy who runs right past him carrying Michael Fitzgerald calls out. He says, my personal favorite is the guy carrying the fully loaded wheelbarrow, 17-second mark in the video, which is equipped with what appears to be a fully functional wheel attached. Well, yeah, Michael, I guess he has to carry that entire wheelbarrow and everything in it, and if he gets across that finish line, it's 75. I don't know if this guy with the with that on his back ever made it, though. I don't know. Maybe I'll ask my next guest what he thinks. He's from Rhodes. He's the co-founder and CEO over there. His name is Amit Jain. How's it? You ever go to a scrapyard like that?
No, but I would love to.
I would love to, too.
I don't know. Really delighted to be here, Tim.
I don't know if it would be worth the back alignment, though, to carry that bed, but $75, hard to say.
I know.
Let's, before we get into like the elevator on roads, let's get into the elevator on you, because you've done some interesting stuff, like a rideshare company for kids and the elderly and disabled, some time at Verizon. Set the table here.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Now you're going to make me date myself, but that's okay. I started when I was five, so I'm okay with it. I've been in the fleet management industry for 25 plus years in different capacities. Used to be a management consultant, then led a research team at Aberdeen Group, which really got me very knowledgeable about the space. We used to talk and benchmark a lot of the fleet managers to see what kind of technologies they're using. And then I became a product leader at GE. Within GE Fleet Services, we created this telematics solution. And that brought me to Verizon. So Verizon recruited me to head up their IoT vertical strategy. So in that, created a strategy for commercial fleet management, whereby Verizon gave me money to acquire Hughes Telematics, Fleetmatics, and Intelligis, combine them together into what's today called Verizon Connect. So that was my corporate journey. And then in 2017, decided to get into the world of entrepreneurship and startups. So I did my first startup where I created this, as you mentioned, rideshares type technology. I was able to exit out of very quickly. I was able to sell the IP and then got into this new venture called Rhodes.
Wait, hold on. What did you learn in rideshare, though? Everyone's always curious about rideshare. Whenever you're in Uber, you're always curious. What did you learn from that experience?
Look, we were creating a technology because I was very concerned about the safety angle, especially if you want to send kids on their own in a rideshare, you know, Uber, Lyft, and those kind of technologies, or elderly or disabled people. And I'm like, there's got to be a better way to create that sense of safety. So we created this sort of technology where we embedded technologies like dash cams, DSP, so telematics technology. And then we added a social network component. So basically, whoever showed up at your doorstep was within your social network or with 1 degree of separation. So all those things created a sense of peace of mind, whereby you would be comfortable sending a kid or an elderly or a disabled person in the rideshare program. So that's what we did.
Very cool. So you go from rideshare to Rhodes. What is Rhodes?
Yeah, so very interesting journey. Look, let's start with the problems. I've been in the industry for a long time. My co-founders, one of the guys started very early on, a pioneer in about early 90s. He created a company called Ithuran and Teletrack. Another guy, he started a Network Fleet, has about 40 patents in the diagnostics. And then you know my history. So, you know, we came together and we said, let's look at some of the challenges that fleet managers and drivers have. So the industry has a lot of innovation going on. But that is creating a lot of fragmentation. We are looking at 40 plus different solutions. The problem is they're not interoperable. They are in silos. The data that they produce is in silos. Then you look at fleet managers. They're constantly in a firefighting mode, right? And the decisions that they're making is based on the slivers of data. So they're not the best decisions that they're making today. So we said, you know, what can we do for them? We came together and we said, let's create a platform where we connect the user experience, we connect the data, and we connect the commerce. So we created this three-pronged strategy where we started off by creating this marketplace platform, which we call Marketplace in a Box. We brought together some of the leading telematics, camera, driver training, route optimization, all these technologies across about 30 plus categories and put them in this marketplace and started white labeling it. So today we have marketplaces with companies like Hub Insurance, with Progressive Insurance, with Bosch, which is a tier one global automotive supplier, and others, right? Then we added a component of data platform. So we had all these technologies. We created a virtual world of digital twins, harnessing all these data elements coming from different disparate technologies, right? So that gave us an ability to integrate and unify data across all these platforms. And last but not least, we added a component recently, what we call Unified Fleet Workspace. So this is where we are adding, because we have that unified data, now we can create a singular unified operational workspace where fleet managers, safety managers, owners can come in and look at what is happening with their business, right? They can look at, they can set tasks, they can set alerts, they can look at custom dashboards based on the holistic data. Rather than slivers of data, which is available in individual solutions, they can look at everything together. Right. So that's what we came to solve. And that's how we are helping a lot of the fleet stakeholders address their common challenges and drivers as well.
Very, very interesting. So do you have like a real, how does this work in real life? Have you worked with any companies yet? How are they deploying this technology? What results are they seeing?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Great question. So we are helping both sides of the equation. We are helping the solution providers on one end and the fleet managers and safety managers on the other. So solution providers, what we are doing with the help of our marketplace platform, which we white label, they're able to expose not only their own solutions, but provide an ecosystem, open ecosystem of solutions to their fleet customers, right? Case in point, I mentioned Bosch or I mentioned Hub, right? So they're exposing entire array of leading third-party solutions, so especially for smaller fleets where discoverability is a problem. They can come browse and buy these curated solutions, which are, by the way, at a discounted rate because we offer channel pricing for them. And behind the scenes, the data is connected. So that's how we are solving the problem for these marketplace hosts, as we call them. By the way, by allowing them to have their fleet customers buy these third-party solutions, they improve stickiness, they improve retention, and most of all, they're able to cross and upsell their own solutions. So that's how we are solving the problem for solution providers. By the way, the smaller innovative guys, for them, accessing huge fleets or even the fleet world is a problem, right? They don't have enough resources, sales resources. So for them, this becomes a really easy way to be exposed to the market. For fleet managers, we have given them this unified fleet workspace, as I said, right? So because we have combined, we have, by the way, added the power of generative AI. So these fleet managers, they can do queries and what-if analysis rather than relying on technical people. So whether they're looking at their problems around asset utilization, they're looking at problems around fuel fraud, right? They're looking at problems of operational efficiency. They can come here and using natural language, they can quickly do queries and it'll spit out actionable information that they can drive their operational and business goals and decisions with, right?
Let me ask you something about I want to ask you something about the AI before we get too past that. And yeah. I forget, because the generative AI, a lot of times it hallucinates when I ask it answers. A couple places have been under, like Amazon, they were like, oh yeah, that walk and go store that was powered by AI. Actually, it was like hundreds of guys in a room watching you on cameras. Is this real AI? It kind of define how it works in your system, because I think a lot of people are rightfully a little bit skeptical in this space.
Absolutely. And they have a right to be. Look, this is a new technology. It's evolving and it has a ways to go. But what we are seeing is it's already producing some results. So I'll give you some examples. There's a company that basically, you know, they have about 1,300 vehicles in their fleet, but they have limited resources. So they were not looking at a lot of different things in terms of, you know, how to even look at oil changes. You know, are the oil changes on all the preventative maintenance was being done on time? We basically, behind the scenes, because we had integrated a lot of the leading technology, they were using, you know, four different DSPs because they had grown through acquisitions. They were using FMC. They were using fuel card company and such. So, and they were using a camera company. So we were able, because we were integrated with all of them, these fleet managers that they had were able to quickly look at what are the problem areas. They simply did queries on their asset utilization. They were able to do queries on, hey, which of my vehicles have not had an oil change in the last, you know, which are the worst offenders, if you will, right? They were looking at fuel fraud. Hey, which of the branches are the worst offenders? All this was in a snap of your wrist, right? You could look at all of this data, which they could not previously. So there are clearly some advantages to driving actionable insights and recommendations very quickly because of generative AI, which in the past, they would have to get in the IT queue and ask your analysts or IT people to create all these queries and all of that, right? So it's still in its early stages, but it definitely is helping companies get to quicker, faster, more robust decisions.
Yeah, fuel fraud too. That'll make some ears perk up. We actually were just talking on the show on our last episode because it's just been a big issue with all the fuel skimming that's going on, just the impropriety, the fraud. A lot of help is needed there. Now, before I let you go, we have a couple minutes left. I know you put out a great article that had three best practices for data-driven fleets, but can you sort of summarize some of the best insights you can leave us with as we head into the weekend?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Look, we have talked to almost over 500 fleets, right? One of the common themes we see, the best-in-class fleets, what are they doing? When they're doing solution selection, right? It's very, at this point in time, with all the technologies, with the rapid advances, it's very important to look at a couple of factors. Some of the things that I articulated in that Forbes article was, hey, you need to look at whether or not these technologies are normalizing and contextualizing data. Because if you are not integrating and normalizing and contextualizing data, you're again only allowing people to make decisions based on slivers of data, right? So that's a very important component. Second one is, as I mentioned earlier, you know, are they providing a single pane of glass, a single source of truth, where your fleet managers who today are jumping from screen to screen to make decisions because each screen represents one solution, right? So that's a very common problem. It is important to see whether they're providing you that single pane of glass, single source of truth to then drive holistic decisions. And last but not least, AI, whether we like it or not, it is definitely affecting how business is going to be done now and in the future. So building that predictive intelligence and analytics capability with some generative AI is also something you want to look at, whether the solution providers are using that in their technologies today.
Very nice summation of the article. Now, people want to learn more about Rhodes. Where do I send them to?
Yeah, please send them to www.rhodes.com. There's a link. They can access us either on a phone call or via email.
Well, hey, thank you so much for joining me. Have a great weekend and take care. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much. Take care.
And listeners, thanks for tuning in today to What the Truck. It's been a great Friday. Thank you so much to Chase from Edison Motors. Stop by. Hopefully he resolves those issues up in Canada. Go check out Edison Motors. They're doing awesome thing with Topsy. Want to stay awake behind the wheel and not see that black dog? Road Dog Coffee, man. RoadDogCoffee.com. Get yourself some of these. Put this in your mouth. It will thank you. And thank you to Amit at Rhodes. Very cool. Now, if you like this show, you can find us on SiriusXM's Road Dog Trucking, 5 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, 11 p.m. on the replay, also on Saturdays. You can find us on FreightWaves.com, FreightWaves YouTube channel, or podcast players everywhere by simply looking up What the Truck and catch this thing on demand. Find me on Twitter at Timothy Dooner. Hey, all. Take care. Have a great weekend. If you go up to see the Chattanooga Lookouts tonight and you see me hanging out there, come over and say hi. Find the guy. Take a picture together. All right. Take care, and don't be a stranger.